The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The Boston Red Sox take an unexpected bullpen game and turn it into a stunning comeback win. Dobbins went down, but Rafaela stepped up with a massive walk-off home run in the ninth inning, propelling the Sox to a 5-4 victory over the Tampa Bay Rays, and guaranteeing at least a split of the series. Now, the Sox' record will jump up to 51 wins, 45 losses, placing them back into third place in the AL East for what seems like the first time in a while. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Terry Cushman Jr., and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, Terry, this was a doozy. For a while there, Dobbins went down. The offense looked a little limp. I was feeling like, you know, this was going to be one of those heartbreakers. I was just going to have to roll my eyes and look forward to a crochet day. But instead, I mean, the bullpen, aside from... I mean, really, it wasn't even Alcala's fault, right? There was awful defense, then a couple wild pitches. But, I mean, the bullpen after him just was locked down. Bernardino, Weissert, Wilson, Hicks, Murphy. These guys stepped up.
They certainly did. And, you know, I've noticed over the last couple of years, when it comes to bullpen games, it really seems like... the team running out the bullpen has the advantage for some reason. Cause you know, with a starting pitcher, you get one, two, and a lot of times three looks. And oftentimes the third time through you can do some damage. With a bullpen game, you can't really settle in cause you have no idea who you're going to be facing in a couple innings. And, you know, so that's one thing. On the other hand, it's not super sustainable because you don't want to tax your bullpen. But our bullpen, I feel like, is fine. And it was well suited to handle, you know, the load tonight, especially with Crochet pitching tomorrow. But, yeah, it was a little disappointing that Dobbins tweaked his knee. That's concerning. I'd rather it be an ankle. You know, if it's a knee, it could be a lot of things. And I'm not even going to speculate because last time I speculated on Alex Bregman, 4 days turned into 6 weeks about. And tonight he came back. But yeah, and I just want to say one thing. I really felt like we had a shot in the ninth because Pete Fairbanks does not pitch well at Fenway Park. He's only pitched 11 and two thirds innings, but he's given up 8 runs. And that translates to a 6.54 ERA. So, and you had that bottom third, you know, with Meyer, and then Anthony ended up coming in for Toro. Thank God. Worked a walk, and then Rafaela just, I still don't know what the data was on that, but it had to have been at least probably 450 or more.
Yeah, I have the distance right here. It says only 406.
Really?
So I'm not sure how, you know, the Green Monster, I mean, I'm never sure how they track that stuff, but it was a no doubter.
It cleared everything.
Exit velocity. I mean, just a beautiful, beautiful hit.
Yeah.
And what I want more than anything is for this team to just step up and keep this train rolling, because this is amazing. I mean, this was taking a victory out of the jaws of defeat. How many times have we seen the opposite? You know, how many times have we seen this team throw games away, especially earlier in the season? This game was just the complete opposite of that. You know, I just looked up just to see, was the wild pitch on Alcala or was it a passed ball on Narvaez? Both of them were passed balls on Narvaez. So, I mean, really, the pitching was just beautiful. The defense looked shaky, really, in that one inning. Toro had that terrible, terrible fielding mistake. But in the end, it didn't even cost us. You know, just a really resilient win from the Red Sox. The guys in the pen, the guys in the field, I mean, just amazing. And like you said, props where props are due. Anthony working that walk was huge. That was a clutch walk. That was the clutchest walk you could possibly get. And stepping in, pinch hitting for Toro in such a big moment against Fairbanks, who looks like he's one of those stress dolls, you know, where the eyes pop out. It's just amazing to see. It really is. I mean, that was just electric.
I can't really put my finger on who Fairbanks reminds me of, but he has a panicked look on his face. Like, I can't even describe it. And then he puts his helmet up to his ear like he's like got a seashell and he's like listening into the ocean, you know, and it's just, it works for him. I mean, Papelbon was a psychopath all those years. So that's fine. And as far as the bad defense, I mean, they kept finding, well, I shouldn't say they kept, it was only one play on Toro, but they found the weakest defensive guy in the infield. I mean, because at this point, you've got Bregman back. He's going to be above average. And Story's been hit or miss, but he had a great defensive play in the, I think it was the eighth inning. And he, you know, he had to go quite a ways to get it. And then his body was still moving towards that third base line. And he managed to, I was like, this guy's going to be safe. It might be a valiant effort, but the runner's going to make it. And he didn't. It was a great throw by Story. So, yeah. And how I put up a tweet and I don't think I'm getting roasted for it. Well, maybe I am. Let me just double check. I said apologies to Seydon Rafaela, but Marcelo Meyer is the best defensive player we have on this team. And I'm saying that with confidence. He made a couple of brilliant plays in either the seventh or eighth inning to get the out as a second baseman. That's his first, I think, appearance of the season at second base, if I'm not mistaken. And he played an elite third base. If you traded Trevor Story tomorrow, he'd be an elite shortstop. He can play any infield position. Put him at first. Mess around. Put him at first. You know, he would be absolutely elite there. And no knock on Rafaela. Obviously, he's probably saved us a handful of games defensively, but I just get so aggravated when Meyer isn't in the lineup because he should be. And I'm kind of stealing this from the Mass Live guys. I heard them talk about this a month ago where they said no prospect is guaranteed to be successful in their rookie year, especially. And they kept referencing Jackson Holliday. And Roman Anthony has blown him out of the water, like I said Wednesday night. Like, Roman Anthony is playing like the number one prospect in Major League Baseball. And I think even Marcelo Meyer has essentially blown Jackson Holliday out of the water. So I want him in the game every day. Even if his numbers aren't great against lefties, they were never terrible in the minors against lefties. His defense alone justifies putting him in there every day.
I agree. And, you know, the bat that you're going to get from Meyer versus lefties is not all that different, I feel, than the bat that you're getting from Toro versus lefties. So I completely agree with you. Platoon Toro and play Meyer where he is valuable, which is in the field. I mean, you're absolutely right. Seydon Rafaela is most likely, at least in the American League, I know he's got some stiff competition, you know, over if you count like PCA, but I mean, he's a platinum glove contender at the end of the day. Marcelo Meyer, though, He might not contend with Rafaela in terms of defensive runs saved or outs above average. I don't know. He might. But just the versatility, like you said, of taking this shortstop and having him bounce around third base, second base, it's absolutely elite run prevention. And that's what I'd love to see. Anthony has been very well-rounded, as you said. You know, funnily enough, despite that horrible, very early, it wasn't his first game where he made that defensive miscue out in right field and everyone was like, oh, God.
When the ball got by him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's really bounced out of that. He's become a very good defender if you look at outs above average. I saw that, I think, in terms of right field value, I forget which metric it was measured in, but in terms of the American League, he's like top 10 right now, maybe even top five, getting close there despite the limited playing time. But I mean, the bat, the patience, he has been so beautiful to see. And it's sort of different to me than Christian Campbell, where Christian Campbell just kept hitting his first month. He just kept finding ways to get hits. The metrics are with Anthony. It's showing the patience, the exit velocity, the swing decisions. The guy is just a phenom right now. And I agree with you. He's playing exactly like you would expect a number one overall prospect to play. Working that walk, setting up Sedan for the walk-off, just absolutely beautiful. Story, like you said, great defensive play. Also two hits tonight. Pretty clutch when it came down to it. We had a few guys who had some clutch gene. It was nice, we may as well say, to see the new guys, right, which are really the old guys, but back and healthy, Yoshida and Bregman joining the lineup, immediately contributing. Yoshida, I believe, another double tonight, right?
Did he have a double?
I'm trying to remember. I might be wrong. I might be misremembering, but Bregman had a double.
Bregman did have a double. It was looking like it could have been a home run off the bat. It hung in the air quite a while, and then it caught about halfway up the monster. So that was good to see. I mean, with no rehab starts, you know, when you can get a knock right away.
Yeah, that's, definitely. And it was a double for Yoshida. So, like, he's just hitting since coming back, which is great. Bregman's hitting, you know, in his first game back. What was really interesting, actually, is I just wanted to point out on the Savant page, this is kind of a fun game because there was a lot of bad luck for both sides tonight. A lot of, like, lineouts or groundouts that you sort of felt really could have had a chance at finding a way through. Jaron Duran had a great lineout, 113.5 exit velocity. Unbelievable. 810 expected batting average. Of course, it was a line out. Alex Bregman had a ground out. Yandy Diaz had a ground out. Sedan Rafaela on that double play that actually had a 500 expected batting average. So it's so fun to see like a game that had so much bad luck end with just a no doubter home run over the monster. I mean, that was such a great way to end it. You know, two guys who I would like to shout out as well. Maybe Alex Cora heard our prayers with Bernardino and Greg Weiser. Bernardino is coming off of, I believe, 3 days of rest. Greg Weiser coming off of 4 days of rest. These guys who were worked in the ground. And sure enough, today, a fantastic performance from both, especially Bernardino, who went 2.1 innings in relief. I mean, that was just huge.
Yeah, I mean, we keep saying they're the two most cooked guys in our pen due to usage. And when Bernardino came in, there were runners on. I think he had to get the third out of that inning. And then Cora went back to him, which I thought made sense. You know, it is a bullpen game. And then he went to him for another inning beyond that. And apparently, according to Nesson, that's the longest appearance that Bernardino has ever had. And then Weissert came out, and he'd had trouble locating. It was his big problem. A lot of walks, basically. And he looked really good. I think another guy we need to shout out is Chris Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
Scoreless in three or four appearances so far. Some of those have been multi-inning appearances as well. And he's a lefty, so that's a nice weapon, and I don't think we're in bad shape as far as lefties, but I think he's a guy that can get out, you know, lefties and righties. And as you're looking towards the deadline, maybe you found some stability here. And then Jordan Hicks, I you know, didn't get off to the best start, but has pitched fine his last two or three times out. So suddenly the bullpen is looking pretty stable. And there's rumors that the Red Sox could trade Chapman. So
I've been seeing some speculation on that.
As recently as yesterday, I think it might have been Sean McAdam wrote that a lot of executives across the league do expect the Red Sox to move him. So we'll see. I mean, the deadline is, what, 3 weeks away? But it kind of feels like three lifetimes at this moment.
Yeah, so much could happen, really. I personally, if we are deep in the playoff contention spot, then I feel like trading Chapman would just be a huge shot in the foot, unless the return is stellar. I mean, you would need to get a team genuinely overpaying out of their mind for a guy like that. Because at the end of the day, you can say, you know, oh, we've already gotten the best of Chapman. He's due for regression, whatnot. But I didn't expect him to even pitch like this coming into the season. I said, oh, the control is going to be an issue. And it hasn't been. It seems like he's really a guy that's taken a huge step forward. His age is not showing at all. And I feel like if we make it to October, I mean, you need a guy like that.
1,000%. When I was, I keep referencing that Braves game I went to, but their bullpen has like their own set of bleachers that the players will sit on. And for the first six innings, they'll all just be hanging out on those bleachers. And I wasn't far from them. And Chapman, for the first three innings, wasn't out there. And I'm like, well, Chapman's too, you know, he's too big of a superstar to go hang out with his boys in the bullpen. And then about the fourth inning, he made his way out there. For the viewing audience, it would have been during a commercial in between innings. And it was just cool to watch him get high fives from everyone. Like, it seems like, you know, I don't know. He's just a really good influence on them, and you don't really see it on TV, but it was just kind of a neat thing to see. And I'm like, oh, okay, there he is. And so I didn't think I would like Chapman as much as I do. You know, he had a pretty serious suspension. Only one worse than his was Marcell Ozuna. And, you know, he's come back and competed at a high level. Could be moved at the deadline. Atlanta's just having a terrible year. But speaking of the deadline, actually, Carrabas posted a TikTok video. I think it was someone else's video, but Carrabas was the one who posted it onto Twitter. Of Breslow last night, not really getting accosted, but a lot of people chirping him about not trading Duran. And you're seeing the propaganda from the clubhouse, like, don't trade him. And so that's what makes the deadline so fascinating. And I think I was today, I said in the war room, I said, you know what? A week ago, I probably thought there was a strong possibility Duran could get traded. Now I'm thinking Breslow doesn't have the balls to do it.
You know, it really does seem like all the discussions we've been having, there are intangibles with Duran that really do interfere with a baseball, you know, assessment. Now, I've been thinking more about your proposed Tatis deal. I'm almost wondering if it wouldn't be, and I saw this proposed by a couple people on Twitter and a few other websites, and I'm almost wondering if, like, Duran and Abreu, you know, for Tatis, because Tatis is a gold glove right fielder. I believe he's won a platinum glove before. That wouldn't be the most unhinged thing ever to happen. I do think it would be crazy to happen mid-season when both teams are pushing for the playoffs, but it's interesting to think about. But Duran is such a vibes guy in this clubhouse that it's just like it adds a whole new level that you can't measure on a stat sheet, you know?
I think it would be a bigger blow to the clubhouse than the Devers trade.
Yeah.
And I think the Devers trade, you know, I mean, they went on a hell of a losing streak after. So I think it did, as much as some people in the media would lead you to believe, I think it did impact the clubhouse a little bit. But I think Duran is much more of a presence in there. And I don't know. I just think his relationship to his teammates is a lot larger. And so, yeah. And if you trade Duran, it would have to be essentially a blockbuster. It would to be a Joe Ryan type guy, or I keep saying Tatis, but that's just a fantasy.
Yeah,
but it's gotta be a blockbuster move that you just can't have any regrets about. If you trade him for prospects only, which is what I think it would be, then you're in deep trouble if things go sideways.
Yeah, you know, I saw someone, and I wish I remembered who so I could shout them out, but I did see someone do a mock-up trade of a three-team deal where essentially the Padres end up with Duran like they want, and we end up with Joe Ryan. And, you know, the Twins get a mixture of prospects from both teams. I can see something like that happening. One name I've been seeing getting tossed around a lot is Tolley. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he's a big prospect in the Sox prospects world. I think Sox prospects has him ranked as like third in the organization right now. And he's one of those guys that like people are saying, oh, you can't trade this guy for Joe Ryan. But Joe Ryan is kind of like the pitcher you hope a prospect can turn into, right? And he's still got a lot of control left. So I almost feel like if that opportunity is knocking on your door, you kind of have to take it. But it's never an easy decision with stuff like that.
I would be hesitant, and I'm going to be completely honest. And I admit I'm not a prospects guy. I don't really start paying attention until they get to AA, unless they're like one of our higher draft picks. Then you know, I might pay attention a lot sooner. But I'm not going to lie. I up until literally 3 days ago, I had never heard Tolley's name.
I know.
So, and he's in AA now. Am I correct?
Yes. Yep. This year he got promoted to AA.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't go on a tirade if he was put in a trade for a Joe Ryan type guy, but we've just been so pitching starved, and I'm not a Breslow guy, but the one thing I do like about him is you can see the pitching infrastructure changing, and you can see a bunch of homegrown guys kind of popping up and getting on the radar, and we just didn't have that for literally 20 years. You had John Lester, Clay Buchholz, and I think that was it. Tanner Houck has shown you know, flashes, but I don't know. I think I'd rather keep Tolley and just get someone else.
That's fair. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I saw, you know, our guy, Eugenio Suarez, I saw some speculation about the Yankees targeting him and what that might cost them. And the price, if the rumors are to be believed, is going to be exorbitant, apparently, which I think for a rental, you just can't do that. But we've seen inflation, you know, really rising in this market. I forget the names of the guys. I really should learn the names of the guys because I keep bringing them up as an example. But the prospects that Houston traded for Kikuchi, you know, that was just a rental and they kind of paid out the nose for it. So we are starting to see an almost Cold War style bidding war, right? Where a team knows that if I go to the Diamondbacks and I say, all right, sure, I'll give you, I don't know, let's just throw out a name like Blaze Jordan or a guy like Miguel Blyce, right? I throw out a name like that. Arizona goes, okay, we'll consider your offer. Every other team that's contending that could use a bat like that, now Arizona's going to say to them, you know, well, what do you got that's better than this guy? You know what I mean? And it's just going to keep working itself up. And I don't know. It seems like maybe they're starting high. I think that it's always sort of a commonality with GMs maybe to leak rumors sometimes about interest. Oh, everyone's interested in this guy, right? Just to pump the price up. But it's interesting. I certainly don't want the Sox to overpay, whether it's for a rental like Suarez, whether it's for a guy who's a little more long-term like Joe Ryan. And I get your point about being pitching starved, because having a starting pitching depth, I think, is being proven to be the most important thing a team can have these days. It's becoming more important every year.
Yeah, I mean, we have more arms than we know what to do with now. Hopefully Dobbins isn't that hurt, but you know, we have the break coming up, and you can probably, yeah, I mean, you could IL him, and he still would only miss one turn through the rotation if, you know, if it's just a minor thing. But you'll have Hauk coming back. I think Tanner Hauk will be the guy that goes into his slot. And, I mean, Bueller looked good, but he looks good against the Rays every time. So I don't know if I can say, you know, he's back. But he didn't lose his command abruptly like he had. So I guess you can take that away from it. But, I mean, you've just got a stellar 1-3, and I just think you have what you need. Like, you can make the case right now that you don't even need to get a starter. I hope they do, but, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm not really – it's just the lineup, and I'm just not sold on this. I don't like how they're utilizing Meyer, as I said earlier, and as I'll continue to say. And this platoon dynasty – that Alex Cora has, that's what I'm going to keep calling it, a platoon dynasty. I don't like that. And, you know, so we'll see. Maybe it's for real for at least 2025. Maybe it can carry us into a wild card. Maybe the division. I mean, I know Toronto's been on a tear, so I didn't really look to see where we are. I thought we were within 5 or so games last night. I got it here. 4.5 as of tonight. So you arguably the division is still within reach.
Yeah, so. Definitely. It's interesting because right now, I agree with you. Right now, the Sox, I mean, I don't have faith in Bueller still. He didn't strike guys out at the clip that I needed him to. It's such a shame with Cutter going out for the whole year, because that's a guy I've been a big fan of ever since he came up, and I was really looking forward to seeing what he was going to do this year. Sandoval is going to be interesting to see when he comes back. I think that they're taking it slow with him, you know, obviously just wanting to make sure that everything goes smooth. I'm not sure what the latest is on him. But yeah, I mean, Dobbins, that was such a freak little knee tweaking. And how many times have we seen things like that where, you know, I'm starting to think like first base, like the bag should just be like ground level, like just painted on. You know what I mean? Because how many times do I see guys tweak something stepping on that bag wrong?
Yeah, I mean, Eduardo Rodriguez just had some issues like that earlier in his career. And I think Dobbins is a little bit more athletic than Rodriguez, obviously, but it's just, yeah, I mean, it's just the nature of the sport, and it's hard to predict. I mean, that looked pretty routine. Maybe he had to twist a little to make the catch, but just really unlucky. It was his first game back. It was his first inning. I'm not going to lie. I dozed off a couple hours before the game. I missed the first inning, and I woke up at that at bat. And so I'm just, imagine how confused I would have been if I slept another 5 minutes. I'm like, why is Alcala out here? You know?
Yeah. But
yeah. And he's Alcala's pitched really well as well. So yeah.
Yeah. It's such a shame that, you know, it's funny. He gave up 3 runs tonight, Alcala, but 0 earned, you know, which means what it means. The guy has velocity. I can see why we acquired him. I just need more from his control, I guess. You know, throwing gas is good, but you kind of need to locate your pitches. Honestly, though, I think I've heard it said before that if the biggest complaint that you have about your bullpen is middle relief, then you have a pretty good bullpen, you know. And right now with Chapman, Hicks potentially being a nice addition, and, you know, Wilson's been good. If Weissert and Bernardino, if they can rest and pace themselves and return back to what they were at their peaks, once Slayton comes back, I'm not sure what the latest on Slayton is either, but I don't know. It's just nice. And like you said, Chris Murphy, who I know for a while on some sites was actually listed as a starter, interestingly enough. I guess he did come up through the system as a starter as soon as 2023. He actually started 9 games in AAA. So he's got that stamina, which is really nice. He can be one of those long relief options, which I think is very, very important. exactly for circumstances like this where you need a guy to eat pitches. And obviously Murphy didn't have to tonight, thankfully. But I mean, the fact that we were able to win this and save Whitlock and Chapman, just give them a day off so that they can be fresh for a crochet day tomorrow. I mean, that's just massive, just huge performance from all the guys who came out.
Yeah, Murphy, all through the minors, was a starter. And I think coming back from, he was in kind of long relief last year with the Red Sox. Let's see, he had a 4.91 ERA. Maybe he had a couple of bad outings late before he got hurt. But pitched pretty well in 2023 before the Tommy John. 6 2/3 innings. Hasn't given up a run and only 3 hits across those innings as well. So looks pretty good. And I think it just makes perfect sense coming back from Tommy John. I don't know what their long-term plans are, but you've got a need in the pen, and why not just ease him back?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we get closer to the deadline, We'll know who we are, really. It's funny because every time we go into a major series, it seems like over and over again, we keep saying this is going to be the most important series you know, of the year. And they just keep coming, you know. But I guess that makes sense as we get closer and closer to the finality, you know, that we would have more important series. This is going to be a tough month for us. Really tough stretch on the other side of the All-Star break. And I think that that is going to do a very good job at exposing our needs. Do we need a hitter at first base, or are Toro and Romy going to be a good platoon? Do we need another starting pitcher, or does Buehler sort of find his way? You know, I think the next couple of weeks are really going to shine a light on what this team is.
Yeah, you know, we were kind of looking at the second 2 weeks of July as a curse, like, oh, of course we'd have to run that gauntlet, but you may as well, right? You're either destined for October or you're not. Mm-hmm. So you may as well just go through those tests, you know, and if you can come out of it, let's just say with a winning record, you know, get above 500 in those final 4 or 5 series. You know, put your final stamp on it. The Red Sox did that last year. They essentially forced Breslow's hand to buy, and all we got was trash, and then it spiraled quickly after that. So here's his chance to really, really shine as an executive, and I hope he doesn't blow it. I don't have a ton of confidence, so maybe that's a good thing, because the bar can only get higher. After that, I can only be pleasantly surprised if a move gets made.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't target relief pitching at this point. I like what I'm seeing from Murphy. You mentioned Slayton earlier. I don't really know what the timetable is for him. As of a few days ago, he had not been throwing at all. So,
and I see George commented that he's actually on the 60-day IL now.
Right. That happened maybe a couple weeks ago. So that puts him, his eligibility would be late July, early August, because it was late May when he got initially put on the injured list. So, or maybe it was the first week of June, but either way. So I want a big righty bat that's not going to be a part of the platoon dynasty, an everyday righty masher that's going to hit a few home runs. That could be Eugenio Suarez. And by the way, you mentioned the Kikuchi trade. Mm-hmm. I only saw Jake Bloss mentioned in there. It was the Astros' number 9th ranked prospect. Now, but take into account, the Astros might have a bottom 5 farm system. They don't have a great farm. So what's the 9th ranked prospect in that farm? And then I looked him up. He's a pitcher with an ERA in the mid 6s.
All right, so I have no idea what people were talking about back when they said he overpaid. Jeez.
Well, it looked like it at first. I saw the same reports, but, you know.
And that's the thing with prospects. You never know.
Yeah. And I mean, Kikuchi did stabilize that rotation and got him into the playoffs, but they just kind of fell flat. I forget. I think it was Detroit that knocked him out. Actually, it was.
I believe so.
Because it was AJ Hinch knocking out his old team. But yeah, forgot where I was going with that. Oh, as far as the deadline goes, I just want a righty masher. And, you know, and you mentioned Suarez. If the asking price is really high, I don't think he'll go before the final day of the deadline, because teams will wait for that price to come down. And I think if the Red Sox shipped Blaze Jordan, who's having a very good year in the minors, that's fine.
Oh, yeah.
That's fine. I don't know if I deal from our pitching depth to get him, but he's a guy. He's never played first base, but like I've been saying, who on this team is playing their natural position right now? Just a few. So we'll see. Yeah. And one other thing to keep an eye on as far as first base goes, Christian Campbell hit a 3-run bomb last night. I don't know if Worcester won the game, but my Twitter was blowing up, you know, when it happened, and he did have a hit tonight. He hasn't looked terrible down there in the minors. So I don't know if he could be the first baseman that you need to get rid of Toro. And you could still move Romy between first and second, you know, at least two or three times a week. And you could even DH him, really. Maybe Ref Snyder hasn't looked stout for the last month or so. I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah.
So maybe a platoon of Romy and Massa at DH is in order. So there's a lot of ways to utilize Romy and still have Meyer and Campbell mostly playing every day.
Definitely.
I believe. And Toro, I'm done with him. I, you know, it was a cute story, but he's bad defensively. And I think the bat is finally getting cold.
The defense is the hardest part to swallow right now. I mean, the right side of the infield has been plaguing the Red Sox defensively all year. Christian Campbell's defense at second was terrible. Romy's defense at second has not been good. Toro's defense at first is terrible. Casas's defense at first was even terrible. So that has just been a blight. Now that we have Bregman back and Meyer can move over to second base, I would personally prefer him at shortstop and Story at second, but either or, it's fine. I mean, that's a stabilizing force right there. That means the only hole really defensively, if you want to assume that Jaron Duran out in left field, you know, that's just, you know, blips. He's going to figure it out, whatever. I mean, I want a guy at first base who can play good first base without question. It's silly because you always think like, oh, well, first base, that's just where you put your worst defender that can hit. And that's true if they can hit. Toro, like you said, it's hot cold with me. I really need more from the guy. He's done a great job so far. The metrics I've been very wary of. Even if we did replace him, I know you're over the platoons, but if we did get a guy like O'Hearn or Naylor, who we talked about, I talked about earlier in the season, I looked, you know, really last week and I was like, oh, these guys can't really hit lefties, can they? But, you know, I'm pretty sure the metrics back them up a little bit more. They have a more proven track record, I guess. So even if you just want to cheap out on a guy like that, if Suarez is too expensive, but we just need to be decisive. You know, I would like a backup catcher without question. Wong, I said it the other night. I got to say it again. Wong is just not it. When it comes to the starting pitching, I would like a front end guy. If we could get a guy like, you know, Ryan or Bubich is another name. I really like Chris Bubich and the Royals, you know, he's only got 1 year of control left. If the Royals fall out of it, is he a guy the Royals are going to feel comfortable extending? I mean, they're paying Bobby Witt that big contract. They want to lock up this Jock Coglione kid, I'm sure. So maybe you can sort of prey on the fact that they're a small market team, unfortunately, and say, hey, here's an offer too good to refuse, you know. But I need something decisive from Breslow. I don't want to see, well, funnily enough, I was going to say a Danny Jansen, but Danny Jansen would be welcome on the team at this point with the current hole that we have. But I don't want to see like a Danny Jansen caliber, you know, player added like it was last year. Cause you're right. The Sox, I felt, really proved themselves last year, said, hey, we're a team who you got to believe in. We're a team that you got to buy. And Breslow bought technically, and it didn't really make a positive impact on the roster at the end of the day.
Yeah, Jansen was the only bat that we acquired last year. So, I mean, that was setting the bar really low. I want to just pull up Joe Ryan real quick. He's older than I thought. Let's see. Yeah, he just turned 29. So he's got 2 years left beyond this. So he'll be a free agent in his, 2 years left. So roughly age 32 season, coming into his age 32 season, I guess. So I don't know. Like, naturally, when you make a trade like that, you want to extend him. But I don't
that's
know.
That's where Bubic I might prefer, because I think he's only 27 right now.
Okay. Yeah, less miles. Minnesota has a really underrated pitching program. Like, they can develop guys, and then they can fix veterans, you know? And I think that's why they're always willing to deal some of these guys. And I don't know what it would... You would probably be putting Duran... and a Fitz and Hauk type guy into a package for Joe Ryan. But yeah, I don't know, but I would love to see a blockbuster move for a number one pitcher or a perennial all-star type guy. That's what I would love to see. And, you know, maybe my pipe dream will be less of a pipe dream if the Padres, I don't know what their schedule looks like over the next couple of weeks, but if they start to slip out of contention, and AJ Preller, he's the most erratic GM in baseball. Like, that dude, if he's not concocting a trade in his head, he's bored as hell. And, you know, he's made some decent ones and really, you know, had some blunders. Yeah. But just one thing, to before we get to the matchups, Jeffrey Lunau did an interview on a podcast, and he was the architect of the Astros dynasty. And I would have thought he was blackballed forever, because you had the cheating scandal, and I think we're all over that. Hinch is back, Cora's back. I don't see why that. I don't see why the cheating scandal should,
just for consistency's sake, you know. Even Pete Rose is back.
yeah, from the grave. But the biggest black mark, I don't know if you remember this, but there was an assistant GM or someone prominent in their front office that was making anti-feminist remarks, and I don't think there's a place for that.
I don't
anywhere. Yeah, and so then he did an internal investigation, and then he exonerated. He's like, nope, no evidence. And then more stuff came out, like right after he exonerated him, and then he had to fire him a few days later.
That's a bad look.
So it wasn't good. And then he got a lot of bad press for getting Roberto Ozuna, had recently had a DV charge himself. And, but the Red Sox torched him and before the trade, even when he was with the Blue Jays. So when the ALCS lined up in 2018, you're like, wow, this is perfect. You know, a guy, you know, you're not going to the World Series without facing the Astros, and yep, a guy you can tune up on. But Lunau acquired him, and I don't know if I would want him. I want someone, even right now on this day, July 11th, I would replace Breslow. I honestly would. But I don't know if Lunau, I think, is a genius. That's why I'm conflicted. I'm like, oh, he's a douchebag on one hand, but oh, he's a genius there. And he tapped into the Venezuela pitching market, and that's where they got Framber Valdez. I think they got Luis Garcia from there, and he's kind of fizzled, but he was very good for them for a couple years. And I just feel like he's just really innovative and ahead of the curve. And could really transform a ball club.
And yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right on that. It's, I'm with you on the conflicted part, because I mean, you might have a good baseball mind, but how much of a head case are you? You know, it really is like we were talking about intangibles with Duran, you know, being a positive for him. There are intangibles that become very negative, even maybe even especially for a person who's supposed to be captaining a ship, you know? So
that would be tough. And when you look back to a lot of the trades and contracts, he very seldom ever lost a trade. And I can't really think of a bad contract that he signed. I mean, the first Altuve extension was very good, very affordable. The Astros had been viewed as a smaller to mid-market franchise. And then they went out and paid Justin Verlander $30 million a year for 2 years. And I think, I don't remember if he was still there when he got the next extension, but on that first deal, I mean, Verlander won a Cy Young. And so it was a win. And initially they actually traded for him before they extended him. So, you know, the Grinke trade I thought was good. You know, they ended up losing in game 7 of the World Series, but it was a good trade. And so he's a guy, like I said, he's a douchebag. I'm not giving a full-fledged endorsement, at least on July 11th, but he is a guy that isn't going to make a lot of mistakes when he comes in, and he'd have a chip on his shoulder. He'd have something to prove. So I don't know.
Definitely. I mean, it's interesting to keep in mind, you know, he's a name that I would not be surprised to see. Because I'm sure if we don't hire him, if we stick with Breslow of all this, if I could absolutely see his name at the end of the year being attached to a new ball club who's in desperate need for leadership, you know, and a fresh look. It would not surprise me in the least if he made a return to baseball, if he's right that he isn't actually blacklisted.
Yeah, and he didn't elaborate on which teams. I'm dying to know which ones they are, but I don't think he would want like a Cincinnati Reds type right. job where the owner's just not going to support him. And the Reds are doing fine, you know, this year. And I'm just trying to think of another. The Marlins, obviously, he wouldn't go there. The Angels wouldn't be an attractive job. Maybe the Mariners, but I don't think DePoto has a ton of support from ownership out there.
Yeah.
So DePoto would be an interesting name for Boston because he does have previous ties to Boston. So we'll see. I mean, if the Red Sox make the playoffs, I think Breslow's safe as much as I don't want him to be. If they miss the playoffs, if the deadline is underwhelming and then they miss the playoffs, there's at least a chance. If they're looking for a reason to do it, they'll have their reason.
But, yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. The big if there, the big linchpin in that whole thing is if the deadline is underwhelming, you know, this is going to be make or break for not just him, but I think a lot of teams and potentially a lot of jobs, you know, whether it's coaches, whether it's managers, whether it's GMs. It's going to be a really interesting couple of weeks, and we're going to see how the landscape develops. You know, we've been talking about the Red Sox having to finish out the month strong, but that goes for the National League too. You know, you were mentioning the Padres potentially skidding. Looks like, you know, they're playing the Nationals, they're playing the Marlins. So not that hard a schedule, but I mean, they're contending with a lot of good teams, the Phillies, the Mets, the Cubs, the Brewers, the Dodgers, the Giants, all of those teams have more wins than the Padres. And right now, the Cardinals have the same amount, and I wouldn't necessarily say that the Reds or the Diamondbacks, who are only about a game or two within 500, those teams aren't out of it yet, you know? So 2 good weeks after the All-Star break could change a lot of the landscape, and we'll see exactly how desperate some clubs get.
You know, it's funny, you know, we're catching teams kind of at the right time, it seems like. And, you know, the Rays have gone on a skid, and they should have won both games. I mean, they had leads late, and I think Cash kind of blew it yesterday. They literally just got that Baker guy that day. They made the trade that morning, and then he's pitching that night. And I don't know if that was the spot to do it. And arguably, I think they could have blew it with that kid that they had in there. I forget his name already. He pitched like three or four innings and just wasn't commanding.
For them?
Yeah.
Yeah, Boyle today?
Yes, Boyle. Right.
We were hitting him really well, I thought.
Yeah, I thought we kind of missed some opportunities there. And I think that would have ultimately fallen on Cash. But
from what I heard, the Rays bullpen is actually like incredibly bad recently. They have like an ERA over 7. I didn't hear the time span, but apparently that's been a big problem of theirs, which is kind of funny because they've been a team who's been kind of a pitcher factory for many, many years, you know?
You know, and I was just thinking, I'm like, they have pitched very well, and that is one of their strengths, but how many guys after Tampa ever really became anything? I mean, Glass now is just injured all the time, and obviously David Price came to Boston and won a World Series, pitched good for, I think, a season and a half in Detroit. Blake Snell has done fairly well since, but after that, who is there? I mean, James Shields was okay, but not great after that. So I don't know. It's, they pitch well in Tampa, and perhaps having 8,000 people in the stadium every night creates a nice low pressure environment, but, but yeah, I don't know. And
so let's see, I have the probable matchups here. So tomorrow we have an afternoon game for 10 p.m. start time, Eastern Standard, or Eastern Daylight, I guess it is right now. That will be Shane Boz versus Garrett Crochet. The following day, a 1:35 p.m. start with Ryan Pepiot versus Brian Bello. How are you feeling about these?
I think I'm not going to say automatic, because every time I do that, it's doesn't end well for the team that's supposed to automatically win. But we did torch Shane Baz pretty good. I'm trying to pull it up right now. Let's see. We got him. Let's see. Oh, he only, I thought we hit him pretty good, but
I think we torched Pepiot, if I recall correctly, during our last meeting.
Okay. Wow, we won 16-1 against Tampa, but Baz only gave up one earned run in 6 innings. So the bullpen must have imploded in that game. Is that his only start? Well, on, let's see, June 9th, 5 1/3, we tuned him up for 3 runs. He walked 3. Perhaps that's what I'm thinking of. But I think tomorrow is most likely a win. The thing to watch for is how sharp is Crochet, because he wasn't the last two times out. And then on Sunday, you know, who knows? But it could be a sweep at this point. I think you're going to, at a minimum, you're going to win one of the next two to win the series 3-1.
I agree. I mean, I'm feeling really good. I mean, coming into this 4-game series versus the Rays, I said, all right, let's just split. Let's just split. I'll be happy with a split. And I still will be happy with a split, but it kind of feels like we need to have things go wrong for that to happen now. It really feels like the Rays are kind of running uphill. Crochet, like you said, it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back. This is going to be a really big game for him. I did see that he's sitting out the All-Star game, which I'm thrilled about. He said he would just like to manage his workload, take a break. Love that. Brian Bello has been electric. It's going to be really, really interesting to see. So Shane Boz and Pepiot, these are guys who we can hit. Pepiot, in our past 2 encounters, we've scored pretty well off of him, like 3 runs in 5 innings last time, I think 6-6 back in April. So these are winnable games. Tomorrow, Crochet, Chapman, and Whitlock ready. You got to do it. Maybe the Sox are going to Sox themselves into a 2-game defeat to limp into the All-Star break, but I'm feeling optimistic. I think it can be a sweep, like you said, but I'll just say, let's just win one of these next two. Let's win the series.
I think minimum we're going to win at least one. And the first two games, you know, the Bueller start, and I really wasn't super confident that we would win the Dobbins start, especially with Rasmussen, but I didn't think they would pull him after three innings. But I thought games one and two were the winnable games for Tampa, and they were winning, and then they blew it. So
we'll this see. Has been a great night to be a Sox fan. Great week, really, to be a Sox fan. Going back, I think 8 in a row right now, 9-1, if I recall. Yeah, obviously in our last 10. So I mean, just on a heater right now. Let's keep it up. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us tonight. I've been Nick, joined by Terry. We've been the Bastards. You've been you. Thank you so much. Let's go, Red Sox. Let's see if we can't get another win tomorrow.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.